that was the extended version of the Olé song. One of the many, many Olé Olé songs that we have. We try to keep it fresh. Plus, we can't find the old one from Blackthorn. So once we get that, we'll have the old one. But Bob, I will tell you that Bob Long, are you there? Because I'm going to talk about you.
I'm here. What's up, Eric? How
you guys doing? How you doing, Bobby?
Bobby Long from Penn State, and of course Shep is here in the house.
In a beautiful house. It's a little different than what we're used to. Maybe we're moving up to the big time. I think.
Yeah, we're looking really good. I mean, we're like I said before. It's a beautiful studio, and you know I don't know what to do. I mean, like you know I'm not falling off the chair.
No. And we have someone who's a little bit more nicer looking to look at than Bill, and we love Bill, but you know, Karen's a little bit nicer as far as being in studio with us.
Karen's terrific. Thank you, Karen. Of course, you know, Bill's a wonderful guy. You know,
Bill's Bill wonderful. Mellon's we love terrific. Bill Mellon.
Right, of course. And I'm sure we'll probably cross paths again.
So every once in a while, Karen, you're going to have to yell at us or something to keep us in line.
No, he only used to yell at Bob. Speaking of Bob, you've ever... So you're not here. Bill can't even yell at you here.
It's tough, you know.
Anyway, listen, before we get into it, I think we have to mention, like we did on Thursday, the passing of Joe Paterno.
Yeah.
And Bob was up there, and Bob was nice enough to keep in contact with me during the very moving memorial service. Did you see that, Chap?
No, I was out of town. I didn't get a chance to really take a look at it, wandering around the countryside like usual. But I did see a couple things. And Bob, I think, didn't you even go live with somebody while you were there?
I did. I interviewed Shane McGregor, the quarterback for the team. He had spoken at the Candlelight Vigil on Sunday evening. So that was a very nice interview, an exclusive interview that we had at Bob Long Sports. So that was definitely interesting, very moving, and great for him to come on.
Now, you know, we'd like to talk about the beautiful game here, but, you know, being a Penn State alumni and being in Pennsylvania, guys, I think Penn State pretty much trumps everything in my mind. So,
yeah.
You know, first of all, you know, the first thing that I said to Bob, because we kind of kept in touch during that time, and I've talked on Bob's show several times about, you know, my feelings. I love Joe Paterno. I always did. I thought he really got stabbed in the back. I think he was made the scapegoat. I think that, you know, maybe they had no better choice. He wasn't fired face to face, and everyone came to his defense, including the CEO of Nike. Okay?
Yeah, Phil Knight.
That was unbelievable because the whole thing was summed up with him basically saying the problem was not in Paterno's reaction to the situation, to the investigation. It was in the investigation itself. And then he basically said, and Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he said something to the effect that, who are these Penn State trustees? Who are they trustees for? Right. You know, because it doesn't seem like they're for us, you know?
Yeah.
And he's my new hero. No. He was talking about how Joe Paterno became his hero when his track coach from Oregon died in 1999 or something. Well, Joe Paterno was one of my heroes, and now that he's gone, Phil Knight's now become one of my heroes. Just having Joe's back, not even being a Penn Stater, but just knowing the quality of the man.
I mean, that does say something about the person. Now, my hero is actually Bob Long, but, you know.
Bobby, what do you think about it? Tell us what it was like at that memorial service, first of all.
Oh, it was very moving. It was unbelievable. Every single speaker had something to bring to the table, and everybody had something great to say about Joe Paterno. I knew it before. I knew how much people loved him, but until I saw one player from each decade come up and in a different way say the same thing, that really pushed it home for me. For a guy that, you know, understood the impact, but really had only been here at Penn State for 3 years and had been a fan of the program. I mean, I'm only 20 years old, so how much perspective can I really have? Well, I think that gave me a lot of perspective.
Sure. Hey, let me ask you a question. Because I didn't see anything. Did Matt Millen speak?
He did not, no.
Oh, I'm surprised. I would think that he would be one of the higher profile guys since he's got media media ties. I was just curious.
Well, they definitely went with great they went with great speakers. I mean, Bob will tell you. I mean, it's funny because the fellow, and Bob will remember, but there was a lineman that talked. I want to say it was from the 90s, I think, maybe.
There was a what? I'm sorry.
A lineman. Okay, remember the fellow who blew out his knee and talked about how Paterno took care of him, put him on the coaching staff?
Oh, yes.
Very moving.
I'm blanking on his name right now.
Yeah, right, but he was amazing.
Some of the prominent speakers were Todd Blackledge, Michael Robinson, Mike Mowdy, who's on the team right now. In fact, Michael Robinson said something very interesting and sort of slipped it underneath the rest of his speech. He said, Joe Paterno, he never lied to me. He never offered me money. He never gave me any cars.
That was great.
Unlike some of you. And so Urban Meyer and Luke Fickell were sitting in the crowd when he said, like some of you. And I thought that was really interesting, to say the least.
I'll tell you what's really interesting. You take a guy like Michael Robinson, who I believe is in the Pro Bowl this weekend, taking that time flying here and then flying right to Hawaii, I guess right after.
Yeah, that's right. Seattle. He said people asked him why. Why would you fly all the way here? And he said, because there's no other place I'd rather be in the world. And so that shows, and that as well pushed it home for me to show how much
people really love Joe Paterno. And Bob and I talked. I mean, I'm from a different generation, but maybe just the fact that I've been on this earth longer, you know, and followed him longer, that I just kind of knew. And when they were talking about, I guess when they were talking about, you know, maybe his time's up, and, you know, with a coach, of course, that's always going to be discussion. But, like, it was never about to me whether he won, you know, the Big Ten title, whether he won six games, or you know, it was always about, like, his Joe Pa, and he earned the right to step down. And I'm telling you, like, his players basically said, if I could sum it up, you know, they know that he's good. Right. And they said when he died, he went with a clear conscience. His son, Jay Paterno, who, by the way, is Joe Paterno Jr. I don't think many people knew that before this. And,
that's right.
And he called him dad for the first time that anyone ever heard him publicly call him dad. He's been a coach there forever, you know. And it was just, he was an unbelievable speaker, Bob. I mean, that kind of brought the house down, didn't he? He was unbelievable.
Without a doubt. Yeah, Jay was a great speaker. And there were a few people saying how maybe Jay Paterno should have stayed as a head coach. Definitely the emotional part of it. But for a guy that really hasn't been able to develop quarterbacks, he really endeared himself to this fan base more than ever in these past week and a half, if you will. The past week and a half, maybe really that endeared himself to the fan base. Even got me to think, wow, this guy.
Right.
Really an ambassador for the university, should he stay? And then I caught myself. I said, you can't let that emotion into it. He doesn't develop quarterbacks. So that's just an interesting perspective as well.
But, you know, the thing is, now that Joe Pa is gone, and whether he died of a broken heart or lung cancer or a combination or whatever you want to believe in your heart of hearts, you know, the point is he's dead now. It's very hard to kick him now that he's gone.
Right.
And now I think people are starting to look at the whole picture and say, you know what, man, maybe he got a little bit of a short shrift here. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And I think that, you know, and Bob, wasn't that really my opinion always? It bothered me the way it came down. And I was never about what he did. You know, that what he should have done more. I think he admitted to that, you know, that he did. But he never, you know, I don't think that he did anything of any type of ill will. I think he may have made a mistake, or he just was, you know, didn't look hard enough into it or follow up as much as we want him to. Right. Or maybe, you know, did he do what he should have done? I don't know. That's something that you never could answer.
That's everything that's going to be said is hindsight, and everything that's going to be said is, you know, we weren't there, and we don't know exactly what he may have done, what he didn't do. You know, you can't make a judgment call like that. And, you know, it's a shame that things for a guy of his stature end it like that. But you know what? When something like a scandal like that goes down, they look for the guy with the highest profile, and he happened to be it.
Well, that's the kill. You're right. And that, to me, is the biggest crime of all. It's the media. It's showing.
It's interesting. If I may add something here, because now, obviously, the fact that he's passed, there's no way to know anything more coming from him, obviously.
Right.
So I hope that Sally Jenkins, who had interviewed him for the Washington Post, in the course of a 2-day interview, got something more than what she put in her lengthy, at best, article. It was a lengthy article for sure, but I just felt there were things missing, things that should have been asked, things that I hope she asked and does know, but just didn't put in the article, because there's just not enough from his camp right now, and obviously he can't defend himself anymore.
Well, maybe she's saving it for a book.
But that guy,
I hope so.
And you know what? This all being true, and, you know, obviously, as a lawyer, of course, I want to get to the facts, you know, and whatnot. We all do. But I think if you really look at this thing, Joe Paterno, the man, he never attacked Penn State back. He was done wrong, okay? He was fired. I mean, all those years, you know, he was just, the rug was just pulled right out from under him. The last memory I have of him, besides this article that Bob's referring to in Washington Post, was him, you know, singing and talking to the people on his front lawn, all the kids. You know, he's always like, you know, go home and study. There's nothing to see here. Like, he was always about, like, you know, do your thing, you know. And all the players echoed that same sentiment.
And not to mention, here's a guy who still made his annual donation. After all that went down, he still did what he felt like he was obligated to do. He still gave that money to that university.
He was a better person than this nonsense. That's what I think. Yep. And I think he will. I think he did go, like Jay Paterno said, with a clear conscience.
I
don't think. I mean, I think, of course, it bothered him if, in fact, you know, maybe he thinks, of course, anyone would. It's like if you hear a scream and you don't react.
What's that?
Caller. Oh, we got a caller. We got Bob from Bucks County. Bob, are you there?
Hi. Reason I'm calling, I'm listening to you guys talking about Penn State Paterno, and a couple things. Number one, I agree with you. You know, Sally Jenkins must be a terrible journalist. It was a terrible interview she did with Paterno. She didn't ask any pertinent questions. Maybe that's why they chose her. I don't know. Also, having said that, I think this story is far from over, and here's why. All right, we have a prosecutor that disappeared, could be tied to this case, who knows. But on top of that, you take Sandusky. Penn State can't let Jerry Sandusky go to trial. They can't do it because of the things he could say. And, you know, not only that, the publicity for the university. That trial could go on for months, and it would be the lead story in the national news every day. Every time you put on the Today Show or Good Morning America, it would be, you know. So here's my point. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, since this is already a Greek tragedy with deaths involved, I wouldn't be a bit surprised for Sandusky to either get rubbed out or commit suicide. And all of a sudden, that scandal's over, boys. At that point, you know, what else is there at that point? You only have Curley and Schultz, and even those charges don't carry much water. And all the principals are dead. Paterno's dead. Sandusky's dead at that point. You know, look for it. I got to tell you, I don't think Sandusky would cop plea because he keeps, you know, singing about his innocence all over the place. So I think that this crazy guy he thinks he's going to trial.
Well, you know what?
Now, I just want to throw one more thing in. He asked permission this morning to see his grandchildren. Okay, and remember, he's not in jail. He's under house arrest.
Right.
So he asked permission this morning for the court to let him see his grandchildren. It would not surprise me if after he sees his grandchildren, we hear a special bulletin next week or the following week, Jerry Sandusky was found dead in his home. And I'll hang up and hear your opinion on it. But again, for Sandusky to go to trial, you know, it must terrify the powers that be at Penn State, because you don't know what this guy's going to say. He could say Joe Pa was in on it. He could say that the reason that Joe Pa allowed him to stay around campus is because he had stuff on Joe Pa, maybe recruiting violations, or who knows? Who knows what he could say? Well, anyway, great show, and I'll hang up and hear
Hey, listen, you know, the first thing I would have to say is it's Penn State, not the mob. So I don't think anybody's getting whacked off.
He's not the first person to bring that angle
now,
off.
You know, I will say one thing. Yeah. I thought when they let him go on bail or recognizance, and you know, when everything for him, I honestly did think that he was going to commit suicide. But he didn't, and I don't think he's gone at this point. I would be shocked if, you know, something. I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. I don't think that that's going to happen. And by the way, you know, anything that comes out of his mouth, you know, is always going to be tainted, because people know what he's, you know, will have an idea what he's about. So, you know, he could say unicorns made him do it. It doesn't matter. They're not going to take everything he says.
I'm going to go to Bob, because Bob has been studying this, the whole conspiracy theory and everything. But I'll give Bob a second. Or Bob Long. But yeah. What I do want to say is I hope it goes to trial. I hope that knucklehead lawyer that he has from State College brings it to trial, because I want to find out everything I can find out.
We want to hear it.
This thing will be gone if they cop a plea. Right. Now, secondly, I don't know. I guess my other comment to Bob is I don't know how much control Penn State as a university has in anything that goes further at this point.
Because now, you know,
of course, there's your whole conspiracy right there. Yeah, if Penn State's controlling I really think that may be part of the problem. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, I think I agree with what you guys were saying, and Bob brought up great points as well. Yes, the university has no control at this point. It's in the hands of the courts, and it's what Joe Amendola and what Jerry Sandusky want to do at this point. Copping a plea, it's an interesting conundrum, because Penn State fans would be left feeling empty in a lot of ways and unfulfilled. Like, they would not have all the information that they'd want. There would not be a clean finish or closing to this case. But it may avoid some bad national spotlight for Penn State, some further bad national spotlight for Penn State. Yeah. Letting the trial go through, it could be very good or very, very bad, as Bob indicated before. Jerry Sandusky could get the worst punishment. Penn State could be made to look better, depending upon the information that comes out. Or he could face the Michael Jackson, O.J. Simpson treatment, where everybody thinks he's, and Casey Anthony treatment, everybody thinks he's going to be guilty. Everybody believes he should be guilty. But a jury of 12 people can't find enough evidence to convict him, and that might be the worst for everybody involved if that were to happen.
I kind of agree with you there. By the way, let me give out the numbers for anybody who would like to call in. It's 856-227-1360, and you can listen to us online at WNJC1360.com. So, hey, get, you know, if you want to weigh in, or you know, obviously you probably want to talk about something soccer related, and you know, give us a buzz.
We didn't get Bob's information, but if Bob gets in touch with me on our Facebook, on our Vuvuzela site, or my Twitter account at Vuvuzela Blast, he's entitled to a free Bark T-shirt for calling
go,
in. Okay, I didn't have a chance because he was off too quickly. But let's turn a little bit to soccer. Okay, now first of all, Philadelphia Union. Interesting. You know, we talked about your team. The Bolton Wanderers took a look, a long, hard look, apparently, at Sebastian Letou. And then there's mixed reports as to whether he's going to sign or not.
No, I heard that he's not. Well, what I just saw was recently that they actually needed a longer look, you know, and they're probably not going to sign.
Well, someone's putting out misinformation because yesterday was like that thing.
It was imminent.
You know, it was imminent.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Letou's back in Philadelphia, but I don't know what that means. Yeah. Okay, the point is I hope he's not going.
Yeah,
but
me
this,
too.
And then now, you know, now I read this morning that we have another situation because Farid Mondragon, the goalie, is being looked at by a team called Deportivo Cali in his home of Colombia. That's his home team. Bless you. That's our Philadelphia Phillies. Indeed, for him, that's his home team, his first club, and he would certainly say would not rule out the possibility that he'd like to go there and end his career. Mm-hmm. So now we're learning the sad reality of professional soccer. Yeah. Okay, and that is that you know you think it's bad in this country. This happens all the time. The transfer window's open for another, what, 3 or 4 days till the end of the
something
month,
like
and
yep.
Where do you see how many people move in the next 3 days?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, first off, I would have to wonder if I know he's getting up there in age, but is Farid Mondragon ready to retire? You know, I mean, that's what we'd have to know.
I don't want him to go. I mean, he's a leader. He captains.
He's a definitely great field general for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want him to go. I understand that we have a very, very good backup. I'm not worried about that. But I think I'd rather keep him.
Sure.
All things being equal, he's a world-class keeper. What do you think, Bobby?
Well, you guys remember last year when Zach McMath came in and played very well, didn't drop a game in about his month and a half of play when Farid Mondragon was injured. I very strongly campaigned for that team to continue with Zach McMath and net. Got a little bit of flack for it. Maybe Farid Mondragon's a little bit of a better goaltender, and you know you can't argue with the way he played down the stretch, but I would have no problems with this team continuing with the youth movement and keeping Zach McMath in net. I mean, he's a first-round draft pick from the University of Maryland. I mean, he's no schmo in there in net, and he's done very well adjusting to the game. I'd like to see Zach McMath get a shot for a full year, so the Farid Mondragon rumors mean nothing to me. And honestly, to clear a little bit of room in the cap would almost be a better thing for the Philadelphia Union, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I'm a proponent of going with youth. You know, in this situation, the only thing I will say is that you really, if you're going to do that, you really need to have a strong leader in place at another position then who can, you know, can take over, because he really did, you know. He really was their leader, and that in that respect, it's going to hurt them. And I think they need a little stronger hand that way. But I agree with you, Bobby.
I think Danny Califf became a little bit of that when Farid Mondragon went out last year. That back line guy, a little bit of a veteran presence and a leader that helped Zach McMath to develop. And I'd like to see him, if this happens, take more of a leadership role on that back line.
No, I have no problem with it myself. You know, I agree with you.
Yeah, but you do. You know, you do see that. I mean, in this sport, more than almost any, you see this kind of, you know, moving around, jockeying around. Now, I guess it brings us to the question that we posed on the show on Tuesday night. You know, and the big question becomes: do you want to be a league which starts? I don't know what that was. You want to be a league that people want to get into.
Right.
Or do you want it to be and grow and have this happen and face your growing pains? Or do you want to be a league that people like Donovan and are yearning to get out of and get a shot? I think that you take the hit now so to purposely grow, where one day European players will be yearning to come play here.
Hey, I mean, I think probably that's what they're eyeing, you know, for the future. They want to be able to be a major league, you know, right up there with La Liga and the Bundesliga and the English Premier League. You know, I think they want to be viewed that way. So I kind of agree.
Right, what do you think, Bob? I'd like to ask.
I think it's a little pie in the sky, to be honest, at least sure at this is. Point. It's going to be no less than a 15 to 20 year process if the MLS ever gets there. I think right now you just need to focus on developing talent in the United States, bring over a player here and there, but focus on not so much bringing in players that are past their career in Europe and just finishing their career here. Yeah. And that might be the way to go right now, but as time moves on, 5-10 years from now, focus on the younger talent from Europe. Yeah. And try to build them up through the system.
That kind of brings up an interesting point. I had a conversation yesterday with an ex-NFL player, and he was telling me until he was maybe 10 years old, 11 years old, he didn't even care about American football. He was a soccer player. He loved soccer, and then you know he got a little older. He started playing football, but it was never his love. He loved soccer when he was a kid, and I'm wondering where we're losing those type of players. This guy obviously is, you know, it was an athlete. He played in the NFL for 4 years, but he loved soccer as a kid, and I'm just wondering where that filter is that screened him out of becoming possibly a homegrown talent. To move into another sport, you know,
right.
I think that, you know, I would love to see how that would pertain to growing the MLS into a, you know, and using homegrown talent that could be world class.
Shab, it's funny because I can comment at least personally from my specific experience. Mm-hmm. As a youth player up and through my sophomore year of high school, I remember people dropping out around 10 to 12 years old, and by the time I was 14, it was only the people that were really trying to do something with the game of soccer and maybe play in high school or through high school into college.
Well,
at 12 years old,
that
contingency really cut off. And under 10 years old, soccer is the biggest youth organization of any sport in the country.
Absolutely.
And I just noticed that they started dropping off around 10 or 12 years old.
Yeah, and that's when he did. And you know what? Honestly, I guess it was something, you know, it actually paid for his college, obviously, you know, and he had no professional aspiration to be an NFL player, you know, until he got to college. And even then, he went to an Ivy League school.
Was he a kicker?
Really?
No, he was a running back.
Usually with, like, kickers.
Yeah, you would think that this guy was a running back.
I guess my point, and I get all that, and I understand, Bob, it's going to take a while, and I understand. I believe that with Don Garber, if they build it, they will come. They're coming.
I think
speaking
so.
About coming, the PPL Park, they're going to be coming in droves to the All-Star game that was just awarded to our city.
Yeah, that was amazing. I saw that. I was away. I was down south and hadn't seen it. And I kind of let out a little a cheer. I was like, yeah, when I saw it. I was very, very happy to see that. I think it's great for our city and soccer in our city.
And just a little bit of an aside to that, but I put this up on our site as well. Tottenham Hotspur is maybe making a tour of America and being in Baltimore about that time. I don't know. Could they possibly be the team? They have a big enough draw. I mean, I'd be in heaven if they played Tottenham Hotspur at PPL.
The
MLS All Stars. I personally would be in heaven. I don't know if they have the cachet of Man U. Although it might be a better game than Man U. I think outscored them something like 12-2 or something, or something 8-2. A lot. They beat them by like about 4 goals each game.
Right.
So it wasn't that close. And that was the All Star team. Of course, these are teams that played together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference when you're taking a bunch of players, you know, and putting them together for one game. You know, you don't have any chemistry, so you know, I would think it would be a looser game as far as you know, taking a Man U, and you know, I would think that they would probably beat them by a good amount.
Bob, how good of a thing do you think it is that the Union and PPL Park and Chester and Philadelphia, in conjunction with each other, have been awarded this big spotlight game? You know, which really is because you know, just
fantastic for the city. There's no doubt about that. It's great for the MLS and the exposure of the Philadelphia Union. I'm worried about two things, though. Seating and parking, because only 18,000 seats. There's certainly not enough parking to accommodate 18,000 seats as we see on a week-to-week basis. And last year they did it at the New York Red Bulls Stadium, Red Bulls Arena up in Hamilton, or where is that? Harrison, New Jersey. That's so right. I just wonder if there's going to be size constraints and how much those tickets are going to be going for. Nothing wrong with a tough ticket every once in a while, but your All-Star game should be at a very, very big stadium, I always seem to think, at least.
I've already got inquiries for my tickets. I don't even know if we have. I don't even know what right of refusal, if any, season ticket holders have for it. With
well, there'll probably it'll probably be a lottery system like they do it, you know, everywhere else. I don't think the season ticket holders automatically get to buy it, you know, their seats, which is a shame.
And you know, maybe this goes against the spirit of things, but why not have it at Lincoln Financial Field?
Yeah. You know, I would think that would be a better venue for it.
Won't happen. You know, I'm telling you, this is – they really draw that line in the sand when it comes to using – at least for an MLS event, using these stadiums. You know, they used the link when they had to, when the union didn't have a stadium yet. They don't want to do it. They want to do it on their own. Now, what I think may be more of a possibility –
they used it for Real Madrid, Eric.
Yeah, but that was right. But it was that an MLS event, or was that that World Tour thing?
I think it was a World Tour.
You know what I mean? I don't know if that was an MLS event. And the point is, yeah, that was a money-making exhibition game. But here, you know, this is an exhibition, but it's a lot more than a typical All-Star game.
Yeah. It is their showcase for the league.
And it is their main showcase. And the reason I say this is because the changes in the playoffs that they've made for next year, the best team with the best record is going to have the home game for the final. There will not be a designated site like Los Angeles was this year. So this is the chance for them to put on their show. Because, you know, they're not going to know if it's going to be in Philadelphia or San Jose or whatever, you know, coming into to the final or the semifinals, okay? So that's an interesting thing. About the parking, I mean, the parking's terrible now. You know, of course, they're going to have to do something there. I can't see it being impossible because there seems to be a lot of barren land around that stadium that they could be put to use in the next 6 months. I guess, Bob, my question is, do you think, and Shep also, do you think that they might build a stadium up a little bit? Either new permit.
I think they already had plans to do that. Weren't they adding? They were adding another tier, I believe.
It's been talked about. I mean,
no,
the question
I thought they
is,
were even starting. That's what I was going to ask
that's
you.
A good point.
I thought they had already started on it, but it was definitely something that, if I remember correctly, that they said they were definitely going to do. Bobby,
it's gonna be tough to do it while the season's going on. Also,
well, no, I thought they had already started construction by now, but maybe they're going to do it for next season.
Well, Nick Sakowicz basically said, you know, the vice president of the union, when we had that summit meeting, he basically said that, you know, he pointed towards the Sons of Men section and showed us how, you know, there are plans to build behind that. As you could see with the river, the bridge right behind there, that there, you know, that that's not as high or as tall as the opposing side. You know, that there's certainly, and they showed some other part of the stadium. So, yeah, they definitely want to do it. I guess my question is why, when better to do it than now? I haven't heard any announcement of that, though, to be honest with you.
Honestly, the only, you know, news I've heard of that has come from Villanova, actually. Villanova, or VUHoops.com, because they're all over this story. They want Villanova football to play at PPL Park. You might remember they played a game against Delaware at the end of this season, and they keep saying that they're going to expand, but that's the only site that consistently reports that they are indeed planning to expand. So I don't know. Maybe they have started expanding, but I haven't seen anything about it quite yet. My question is, where do you expand? You have the high-rising arches on both sides. You have the nice scoreboard and infrastructure on the other side. The only place, really, that you could expand in large capacity, I'd say, is on the Sons of Ben side by the river, and that would potentially even take away the river side view.
I thought they were going, from what I thought I saw, I mean, my memory's not that great anymore, but I thought they were going to do it not at the river end, but the opposite end, and build up over on that side, or towards from the bench side all the way around a little bit. I thought they were going to add a tier.
They definitely, when we were there, they definitely pointed out areas that they had planned to grow. You know, it was built with the idea that it could expand.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of the reason why, if you look at the Sons of Men section, it's so terrific in a sense, because it's like, it's kind of a small section of all the crazies with the flags waving, and they're not really bothering anyone because no one's behind them, directly behind them. But, you know, the point is, like, let's see if that gets done. Bottom line is, I think it's a great venue. I don't know how many people in reality would want to go, you know, if they're going to be that short tickets. I have no idea to estimate that. I don't know how many people from around the country they would be able to, they would be coming in. So, you know, maybe it is a bad move to put it in a 19,000 seat stadium. I don't know. Yeah.
Do you know how it was? I mean, was it sold out up at Red Bull's stadium? Was it filled?
I don't believe it was, no. So there's that aspect of it as well.
Better for the true fan. You can get a ticket. You know, I mean, maybe not great for the MLS, but it's good for us. We get to go.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull Stadium is comparatively the same size. It may be a little bigger, maybe seat capacity-wise. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, we had El Clasico. Number three, the Copa del Rey, the two-legged final. Sounds like a sack race and a picnic. But the two-legged Copa del Rey quarterfinal. Final eight, be quarterfinal, right, Shep?
Yes.
And that's good, yes, right? Real Madrid at Barcelona, which is anybody's final. Now, just with a little background, they go on aggregate scores, and Barcelona had won 2-1 in the initial stage, I believe. Okay, I believe it was 2-1. So that game was at Madrid. So Jose Mourinho, the coach of or the assistant manager of Real Madrid, was under a lot of heat, even though they were 5 points adrift in La Liga in first place. They don't think very well to not doing well against Barcelona, obviously, and they don't think very well to not doing very well to Barcelona on your home pitch. Okay, so he took a lot of heat over that, to the point where a lot of people were questioning whether he would lose his job. Well, he was 5 points ahead in the division, in the league, by the way, against Barcelona. So they play this game. They go back to Barcelona, and it was the third Clasico of the year, of what could be up to 10 or 11, I believe, in theory, with the cups and the league and, you know, all the potential matchings and the Champions League and stuff. So it's crazy how many times they can play. But what you had here, what was amazing, because Madrid had to come out to play on the offensive. Just to give you guys a little bit of a summary that I made of the game, Madrid has to come out on the offensive in this game. So they put a very offensively dominant team out there, because they have to score, because they've got to win by two goals in this game, okay? Because the road goals come into play, and they're down a goal with a road goal, okay? So they get 17 seconds in, they miss it. They have a perfect opportunity, and it looks like it's not going to be tonight. Somebody comes in real on Barcelona, and it just misses wide, okay? I can't remember who the shooter was. But so the game goes on and on and on, and really nothing's happening. Madrid is controlling the pace of the game, which in a Barcelona game is surprising, because Barcelona does what they used to say in football, like takes the air out of the ball. You know what I mean? They hold the ball for possession, you know, usually quite normally 2-1, maybe even more possession, you know, control.
Right.
So it's surprising that, you know, they're not, Madrid's controlling the pace. Madrid has they hit the crossbar. Okay, Di Maria hit a beautiful shot that hit the crossbar. Finally, Messi, which makes him messy. He comes up, there's five guys basically on him. Okay, he's got the ball. Somehow it's magnetized to his feet, I should say. And he slips a pass over to Pedro, who nobody bothers to cover, because I think the defenders may have been mesmerized by Messi as well, okay, who slots the ball home. Beautiful goal. Kind of goal you'll see forever, just to show you how great Messi is, to get that ball through this sliver of daylight, okay? They score. Not sooner, so Barca's up 1-0 against the play, the run of play. Very quickly, Dani Alves shoots a bullet. I mean, a one-time bullet, top right-hand side, and they're down 2-0. Okay, game over, right? Looks like it's it. Got to be over. You watching that game, Bobby Long?
Yeah, great one, actually. It was really interesting the way the dynamics went back and forth. I assume you're talking the Copa del Rey. Mm-hmm. Barcelona almost gave that one away after getting out nice and early with that lead.
Well, thank you for that. Now you ruined the end of the story. Okay, thank you for that.
Oh, man.
Anybody can read.
Okay. So anyway, the Madridistas, as they're called, they're in trouble. They're definitely on the back foot. Okay, and then they score a goal. This is unbelievable. Real Madrid scores a goal early in the second half on a corner kick. Sergio Ramos heads the ball in. The goal was disallowed because he fouled the defender. Kind of close call. Could have went either way. You can just imagine. I mean, this is not going to be Madrid's day, right? I mean, 2-1, there was another 40 minutes to play. Yeah, it looked good. But, it's interesting thing happened. They continued to make a game out of it, Real Madrid. They really could have, I mean, believe me, they really could have, like, packed up their bags. They've been here before, and they're on the road.
Right.
You know, and Barcelona never loses, and they very rarely ever, anybody gets points on them at home, okay? So what happens? They keep fighting. All of a sudden, Ozil, the fine German midfielder, beautiful pass to Ronaldo, who puts a ball home, and it's 2-1. Then Benzema on Real Madrid does a poor clearing pass, and all of a sudden there's a shot wonderfully past the keeper within 10 minutes. And 10 minutes to play, it's a whole new ball game. Okay, I mean, you know, the unsung heroes galore, and then the real ugliness. It was a real chippy, ugly game. Okay, Ray Hudson was going crazy, which just listening to Ray Hudson do a Clasico game is unbelievable. You know, because the things that he says, I mean, it's like you think he's in church. You know, he's like a preacher.
Well, it is. It's his cathedral.
It certainly is. People love him. So people, they don't think he's foolish. They think he's terrific. But anyway, so now all of a sudden Barcelona's on the back foot. Okay, and they you know, there's 10 minutes to play. Now remember, Madrid has to score.
Right.
They're down 4-3 on aggregate, so they're going to lose unless they score the goal to bring it to extra time, where they would have to score again. Okay, so they're playing for their lives here. They keep playing. They bring it on. They're putting on. They get right near stoppage time, and then Sergio Ramos of Real Madrid gets red carded, which everyone agrees was a bad red card. This comes on the back of two horrible fouls on Barcelona that weren't called.
Doesn't it sound like what you're saying? I mean, take a second here. Doesn't it sound like the same type of thing in every game?
Sport or every game? You mean soccer or just every sport? Really?
Actually, every sport.
You think about football, you hear all the referee didn't call this interference.
Right, now every sport, it's the same. It always comes down to that, you know, it seems like.
Well, there always has been a
questionable
big
call or, you know, in soccer, you get yellow card, red card.
Well, bottom line, they red card Ramos. It was his second foul, so it was the second yellow.
Right.
But he was out of the game.
Right.
They ended up. Barcelona ends up going through in the skin of their teeth, 4-3. It was great. But once again, Barcelona goes ahead. Now after the game on Twitter, you know, they really went kind of wild. I believe Ramos tweeted, you know, that, you know, we were up against too much, if you know what I mean, like the referees. Like, and there's been the conspiracy theory with regard to the referees of Barcelona for years that they're almost mesmerized by their style of play in the last three or four years. So, Bob, what do you think? I mean, it did well, but does that make Mourinho look good that they hung in there? Or do they look like a bunch of crybabies bitching about the referees when they lost again?
Well, I mean, I see both sides. First of all, extremely impressive effort, as I said, and apparently spilled the beans on before. The fact that they were able to stay tough and come back, being down 3 goals in the aggregate, and just to be able to strike lightning quick, as they always seem to be able to do. So that's definitely impressive. And yes, the call went against them, so I understand the fact that they were upset about the calls. But when you come back to league standings, they are still up 5. And it's something that Crack has talked about with us on our Tuesday night show for, like, I don't know, a month and a half now. If Real Madrid can't get over this psychological hump, they're going to give up that league. And I think this game, at least especially that comeback for them, gave them a little bit of a psychological boost that can help them for the rest of the season. So, yeah, they didn't want to go out in the Copa del Rey like this. But if you're talking about league standings and trying to win La Liga, this win or this tie does as much as anything for them.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing with Barcelona and the referees, I guess what's really hurting the sport just in general, we don't bring this up enough, I know Crack has brought it up, it's just the fake, the fouling, the what do you call that? There's a penalty for it in hockey. When you fake like a foul,
play acting,
right. You know, I mean,
diving.
Yeah, well, they said that, you know, what's the name? Cesc Fabregas, when he was up at Arsenal, okay? He got hit a lot harder than he was in La Liga, and he never went down like a shot like he does every time he gets touched. And they say that this is the workings of the Barcelona, Busquets, and people like that who are teaching him, you know. But it was a very chippy game, Bobby. Didn't you think it was really like a kind of a dirty game? It's a very tough game.
It always seems like when these types of rivals play, it always gets very chippy.
It does get very physical. I mean, there was a lot of hitting, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of injuries, a lot of leg chops down and stuff. Like, it was ugly. They could have given cards. Like, they could have given 3 times the cards. Hey,
Bobby said something really interesting about the psychological aspect. You know, it's funny how the game is played down on the field, but, you know, how much of that game is really played in the players' minds, you know? I mean, obviously it does have some kind of weird bearing on how they're performing. I find that really interesting. It's something to really, try and take note of.
I think that they will play again. Interesting to see how Madrid will take up. They're playing a team that's I believe they're playing the Yellow Submarines today. I'm not sure, but I know they have a game that's imminently winnable. They got to keep playing, right? So we'll see. I guess we'll see if they can hold on. It's a little scary. I get the same feeling, you know, with Tottenham a little bit in the game last week. You know, I kind of get the feeling that the stage is getting big. Although Tottenham hung tough in that game, they came back. Very similar kind of game. They hung tough and they couldn't win at the end and a call at the end. Some bad calls. You're right. It was the same script, except the difference was it was a league game, so it was a penalty kick, and the other team got the win.
Yeah.
But for Madrid, it really didn't matter if they lost by a goal or two goals at that point. So
right.
It was really the same ending. Yeah. They you know, seems one team got nothing, and one team moved on in the cup run. So it was very good. Talking about our wonderful gathering that we had both for the Philly Spurs and for our show last Sunday at Fido. It's pronounced
Fido. I thought it was
like
Fido.
Like Play-Doh. Fido.
Yeah, right. Fido.
I got it. Right. I'm on it, man. I looked it up and everything.
Okay.
And my Irish Celtic
dictionary.
How do you pronounce that again?
Fido. Like Play-Doh.
Fido.
No, I don't know.
I thought that's what the guy had said, but if you looked it up.
My Celtic to English dictionary says Fido.
Okay.
So we're there.
We were missing one thing.
What?
Bob Long.
Yeah, we were missing Bob.
We did.
Bob, you missed seriously. But anyone who didn't get a chance to go, it was a wonderful doubleheader. Wonderful place. Just I could say wonderful a million times, but a wonderful place. There you go again. To do the game. Shep, you summed it up. What did you say to me? And you're basically encapsulating our experience as to what it was like for you being not like a soccer head like maybe me.
No, well, first off, I couldn't even believe a place like that existed at 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning. By the time the second game stopped, there had to be 200 people there. It was like a soccer oasis in Philadelphia.
Easy.
You know, I would think that that would be some place that we see over in England or Ireland, you know, more so than in the middle of Center City, Philadelphia. You know, nothing else going on around it. And we walk in at 8 a.m. when the place is open, and the place has, at that point, 50, 60 people that were, you know, waiting for the Tottenham game. Not to mention that they were, I'm thinking they were still drinking from the night before.
But they were drinking.
I was looking, I was like, oh, my God.
Man, that's when I knew we weren't in Kansas anymore.
Yeah.
We were waiting for the doors to open, and some apparently a couple people got in we didn't know. I said to Shep, I'm like, where are all these people walking to? We walk in, there had to be 40, 45 people
there was.
Already there drinking.
Easily.
It was 8:05.
Yeah.
It was 25 minutes before the first game even started. And you know what, though? It was great. The Philly Spurs, I dispersed about 60, 70 T-shirts.
Easily.
You had to cough yours in as a donation.
Yeah, I had to get mine up.
Right, which is right. We'll get that back for you, pal. But anyway, the thing was, though, it was wonderful. And then the show went really well as great. Everyone loved listening to it, although it's tough doing a remote like that because, you know,
there's a lot of
phone situations
and everything. But actually, I think it went pretty smooth considering. Right. And, you know, what was neat was to see, you know, because it was Manchester and Arsenal afterwards, correct? Manchester and Arsenal.
Right.
But you see, first off, there was no fights. That amazed me for, you know, because you put alcohol and you put, you know, it's a volatile mix. You know, you have people with allegiances to all the different teams and you put alcohol into it. And everybody was pretty, I guess they were on their church behavior since it was Sunday morning.
It was a church day. But let me ask you, think about an NFL soccer bar. Football bar, right?
Yeah.
You know, bar. Let me tell you. Did you feel like, you know, could you see like Cowboys fans and Giants fans?
They would kill each other. But they wouldn't be in the same place.
Oh, I don't know, man. The hatred's pretty good. Like the man. The,
no, but
man
what I mean
City
is,
and,
no, what I mean
I'm
is,
sorry, man
you wouldn't find
Arsenal.
Giants fans in an Eagles bar. You won't find that.
Right. Well, it's great. I mean, I think there's a soccer camaraderie, even though, you know, they always have the whole thing about the, what were they called? You know, the whole thing with the England, with the hooligans, you know.
Right.
But I think in reality, that's not the case. And people are real happy to share the sport that they love with other people. And
yeah.
It's, believe me, I was dogging on the couple Arsenal fans who were Tottenham's like enemy the whole time. It was all in good fun.
You know what? You know? And that was it. The other thing I would say is that if you're not a soccer fan, take a minute and come down and see something like this, just to feel the atmosphere and just experience it. Because you know, I'm still a novice soccer guy, but I got into the spirit, and I'll tell you, I loved it as much as watching any American football game. You know, with a crowd, I thought it was really something to see.
They were great games too.
That helps. But it was what a football
right.
Sunday we had.
Right.
We had the English Premier League, and then we had the AFC NFC Championships. And I had a full slate that day.
And you make probably the best point of all. It's not an either or. If you go, but no one will. If you go to Fido or whatever, no one will take your man card. card from, or your American citizenship card.
Well, I will tell you.
It's not a girly sport. Take my word for it. Although the girls play it very well. It's a great sport. And you know what? No one's telling you not to be a football fan. We both ran home so we could watch the doubleheader of the championship.
Absolutely.
The conference championship.
But I will tell you, I enjoyed those games just as much as I enjoyed the soccer games earlier. And if anybody did say something about a man card, I'm going to say, you know what? Don't say it. You can't revoke my man card till you at least go and watch a game and see. And I can't, honestly, that's another aspect of the game that I'm really starting to understand and see the physicality of it. It's not just run around and chase a ball, you know. These guys take a beating.
And they really do. I mean, look, I know, like we talked before about the diving and what diving, that was the thing. You know, you do see some of that. But the reality of the situation is they're very, very skilled. It's a very, very these good, very good leagues that we do have a ways to go here, but it's a very good product, and that's why I believe. And I know, but Bob, it could take 25 years. It may never get there, but the point is, I guess if you look at it conversely, it's already there. Those people from there are here.
Well, that's was
that
point,
from West Side Story? You know, you sing that song, everyone that we go back to Puerto Rico, well, everyone there would have been here. You know, it's kind of like that. They're here already.
That's a great
It's not like we're trying to recruit. I'm not trying to recruit guys our age, because they're kind of tough to recruit. But I'm glad to see that, you know, you're seeing it for what it is.
Yeah, and they had, I mean, there were some nationals that, you know, from across the pond, as they say, that were there, but there was a lot of American people, you know.
And we are going to be doing another remote within the end of March, okay? We're gonna definitely do the North London Derby between Tottenham and Arsenal, okay? That's coming up, I think, in the end of I believe it's the end of March, okay?
And I implore you to come out and see it. And
I'm sorry, it's the end of February. I'm sorry. It's like in about 4 weeks. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, you know. But also, if you're listening and you'd like to call in, you can reach us at 856-227-1360, or you can listen to us online. Well, I guess you're already listening to us, but WNJC.
But don't turn off the computer.
But if you have to leave a radio, you can get us. You can live stream us. Right. So, you know, or you can hit us on the Twitter account at Vuvuzela Blast.
Thank you, Shem.
No
I
problem.
Appreciate
that.
VUVUZELA.
Blast.
World Soccer.
You can't spell
BLAST, right? Right. It's Vuvuzela, the World Soccer Show. Now, also, we're going to be taping a remote in March from the Football Factory and Legends again.
I talked
to the guys up there, and they're very excited. I told them to find a good, set of matches. We went during Christmas week, which was great, but it was kind of empty.
For what I understand.
Right. So we're gonna go back there. That's another wonderful place. So two-thirds of, or I guess half of our broadcast team on Tuesday nights is my New York guys, Eric and Cesar.
Right.
Okay, so we're definitely gonna get back up there. So anyway, it was a great experience. And Bob, you better make sure you get to one of these things, pal.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna do my best to get to the next one. And as I'm sure you guys can understand, last weekend was kind of a difficult weekend, at least up here. So it's tough for me to get back, but I can guarantee. I'll be back for one of these because I'm really excited.
Yeah, we'll do it. I mean, look, we're kind of learning what we can do, so it's a good time. And the Philly Spurs, I'm definitely going to get a nice crowd out for that. So we'll get back on more of that information for you. Now, when we were talking about the Clásico, and Lionel Messi who won his third straight Golden Ball Award, I believe.
Spikes
something to Oro. I'm going to get it wrong. I think it was a Golden Ball. Is that right?
That's right.
Bob,
the best balls to have.
Yeah, they and he won his third straight Golden Ball, okay, which is the best player in the world FIFA, okay?
Right,
not your Brandon.
That's
okay.
What I was referring to.
And he, I guess to honor that, he was put on the cover of Time Magazine and also voted for Man of the Year. Now, he was on the cover of, I guess, 99% of the Time Magazines, except for one location.
Small little country.
What was it? Because you're a man of the world. What country was that, Chet?
I believe that was the United States of America.
And you remember, they put something else on there. It was crazy.
The Year of the Protester, I believe.
No, that was the Man of the Year. This was like just a show, like Sleeping or Dreaming or something. It was they were basically was an ad for the big story, I guess, for the day. So, I guess that the question is not. I was going to talk about Leo Messi and whether he could, in theory, be Time's Man or Person of the Year. But more interestingly, they don't put him on the cover. Now, a lot of soccer people and scribes, once getting wind of this thing, are thinking it's a real slap. It was a personal slap in the face, and basically, Time Magazine or the American corporate empire saying, hey, you know what? You're not there yet.
Yeah, I kind of think it's the latter. That's what I kind of think that they're thinking, which is really obtuse thinking because, you know, the rest of the world would say the same about us, you know, and they'd be right. You know, we just don't accept it like it is around the rest of the world.
But I'll let Bob chime in here. But here my point with this, I guess, was interesting because they interviewed some people in this particular article. It's a girl. She said, I'm a baseball fan. I really didn't know who Lionel Messi was. And I'm a sports fan. I'm a baseball fan. I'm football, American football. I didn't know who he is. And yeah, it begs the question is, do most people not know who he is? And Cristiano Ronaldo.
No way. They definitely know who he is. It's like saying you're not a golf fan, so you don't know who Tiger Woods is. Maybe on a slightly smaller scale, but there's no way they don't know, or a real sports fan doesn't know who Lionel Messi is.
I agree and I don't agree. I mean, I just can go from my own personal experience, and until last year, I did not know who he is, and consider myself a sports fan. Obviously, I know who he is now, but still, he's not. You know, I did not know who he was.
He's a throwback.
My ignorance.
It's not ignorance, and I'll tell you what. You know, we don't follow the sport. When you don't follow it, you don't get a lot of coverage on it if you're not looking for it, right?
True.
On ESPN, you get a little because they televise it, all right?
Right.
You know,
right.
Once in a while, but you don't get much. It's not one of your big stories. He wins the Golden Ball for the third time. You know, then maybe that's the last story. You know what I mean?
If they even say it, I don't even think they cover it at the bottom. Yeah,
maybe.
Right.
Yeah. But the point is, no, I don't think Tiger Woods. I mean, of course, people knew Tiger Woods because he was by far the best player for a very long time in a sport where it's only a single individual sport.
Right.
I think
that
makes a difference.
Right.
I mean, people know him. There's Tiger Woods golf clubs, the people that golf. People know Tiger, and plus Tiger was African-American.
And that made
him very, you know, he was very interesting to ethnic people because he had that.
He was Coblin Asian by his description.
And his pseudo, you know, criminal, non-biblical criminal escapades.
Moral criminal, I suppose.
Whatever,
but,
right.
You know, well.
Right. That was only in the last 2 years, though.
Yeah.
Tiger's bigger, though. I mean, I would say. But then again, you know, before they had the Fox Soccer Channel and stuff like that, you know, I don't know really. You would see Tiger Woods every other weekend on your TV set
in
America.
Yeah.
Where would you see Lionel Messi? Plus, there's so many more soccer games. Lionel Messi's not in every big soccer game.
No, that's true.
King Leo.
That I think is more than anything. You don't even being a high profile player as he is on a high profile team, you don't see them every day or every week you don't get the exposure like you do for the American athletes.
I mean, you're right. We'll move on only because I have a few more things to mention. We're almost done with the hour, but I think the other thing about Messi's a real gentleman. You know, Messi is not outrageous like Cristiano Ronaldo or Wayne Rooney.
He does know, man.
He keeps to himself. He's the best, maybe the best, one of the best that ever was.
You know,
but he's not like, you know, I don't know what his mental makeup is.
Which
but he
is kind of crazy that we pay attention to the guys who act out. I guess it's just like children. You know, the one that's acting out is the one who gets the attention. You know, so this guy flies under the radar in our country, I mean, not around the world, but he flies under the radar because he doesn't do crazy things or he's not, you know, with many women that we're finding out or you know, kicking his dog and running over
a
cat.
He's a product of the media generation to which he's a huge athlete, maybe the hugest in the world in reality, you know, because he's very close to the vest in interviews. He doesn't give very much of himself. And, you know, so he's a boring interview. So he's not, you know, You know, Tiger Woods was kind of boring until he started being the best player ever in a sport. You know, he was lapping the field. He was the Babe Ruth of, you know, golf, basically.
Yeah.
Messi, if you call him the Pele of his time, that's a huge thing. But he's still one of 11 playing on the field, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that does make a little bit
maybe
of a difference.
If his country wins a World Cup while he's playing, maybe that might change.
Yeah, and they also question his loyalty to the country, to Argentina.
Yeah.
Now, is it Argentina, right? Argentina.
I believe.
Yeah, he's Argentina.
Bobby.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Bobby, you still there?
Yep, I'm here. I'm fine. You're cutting in a little bit. He's Argentine, correct?
He's the Argentine captain.
Yeah. Right. Oh, Messi, yes.
Yeah, right. You get a little mixed up.
Sometimes you do.
And I usually get it. Yeah, I do, too.
Well, there's so many.
Here's the thing. Leo Lassen, before we go, just to give a little bit of a shout-out to Liverpool, Steve Rad's favorite team, by the way.
There you go.
They win They make it to Wembley for the finals of the Carling Cup, which is the League Cup. And, Shep, I'll try to explain this to you. But, basically, it's an all-English thing. It's an an all-English type of thing where it's very similar to the FA Cup, which is also an all-English. I think the FA may be all-British type of thing. So it goes beyond England,
the
okay?
Cups are runneth over.
But there's so a lot. But the point is Liverpool, who's having a very so-so season in England this year. Yeah, like they're hanging in the league. But they managed to knock off Man City to get to the finals. I'm sorry, to get to the Final Four of the Carling Cup or the right. League Cup. It used to be called the League Cup. Carling sponsors it now. And now they win to play Cardiff City, who's the team, another Welsh team that really had a better year last year than Swansea, who made it, but they didn't win the playoff.
Right,
right, remember the playoff to get that third seed to move up for promotion. right. So that's gonna be so they get to play at Wembley, which is huge. And then you look at, we're down to the 16th now, Tottenham in the FA Cup, which is a little more prestigious, although the cups have gotten less prestigious, and the reason that they are is strictly because of money. Because there's so much money in the European league that people do not want to, like a team like Tottenham or Arsenal or Chelsea, they're very quick to bow out of some of these like smaller cups, like the Europa Cup or even like the League Cup, if it's going to mean that it's going to hurt their chances of finishing Final Four and getting the Champions League, which is where the money is.
Right, right.
As I told you, like, that's the creme de la creme.
Right.
So right now, we're Tottenham sitting. If they're going to at some point soon, probably concede the league, the Premier League, they don't want to. Well, the argument becomes, you know, you don't want to end up fifth.
You know what I need?
And you don't want to end up fifth.
I need a chart.
You need I'm going to make you a flow chart.
Make me a chart of all the cups so I can
will
just
do
follow
that.
It because
but anyway, the bottom line here is Liverpool at Anfield today. Anfield pulled out the second half of the Manchester knifing. They took City out of the Calder Cup. They took Man U out of the FA Cup, which is huge.
Because
Liverpool has a huge tradition, and believe me, Man U also. So it's wonderful to beat them and Sir Alex. So they're down there. Tottenham also there. They beat Watford, a sleeper of a game yesterday afternoon. But they're, you know, they would just win, baby, as Al Davis said. They're down to the Sweet 16. They go back, and all you want to do, as they say, is get to the hat. Their names are going back in the hat, and they're going to draw. That's a beautiful thing. They draw who gets home field. It's all like even. Your head gets home, you're away. You play a fourth, you play a championship or a second division team, or you play Man City. At Man City. You know what I mean? So there it is. Liverpool alive in both of them, and they're in the finals.
I got to find a soccerologist.
Yeah.
To get this
down. Yeah. I'll get you a flowchart. Okay. So we have to say goodbye now. So, Bobby Long, thank you very much.
Bobby, couldn't talk to you, man.
Everybody, thanks for
listening. Thanks, guys. It's been a while.
No problem. Everybody, thanks for listening. We will be on Tuesday night on Blog Talk Radio. Can I do that? we'll be on Blog Talk Radio. Vuvuzela, you can find us. We archive the shows as we archive these shows. And we will be back next week here at WNJC. We're glad we're going to have a nice extended stay here. We're enjoying ourselves very much.
This is a great place.
Shep, thank you.
And just to enjoy your bangers and mash this morning.
I will. Thank you, my friend.